Today on Maine Calling, how your digital footprint or digital trail follows you through life. We know that old social media posts can haunt job seekers and political candidates, but what about the rest of us? And what about other online activity like emails, fitness trackers, and online shopping? Who's looking at your information and what can they find? How might that impact your life? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we learn what's possible for hackers and others to uncover and whether we can ever erase our digital footprint. And what about when you need to access someone else's digital records? We'll learn how AI algorithms are changing and accelerating the ways in which online data is used. What's out there and what needs protecting? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Every action we take online leaves a trace. That digital footprint creates a picture of your own life. How do these records live on, whether we want them to or not? What are the benefits and risks of having this digital footprint or digital trail? My guest today, Dr. Judith Rosenbaum, who is professor and chair of the Department of Communication and Journalism at the University of Maine, and Dr. Gary Cantrell, who is associate teaching professor and director of computing programs at the Rue Institute and with the Currie College of Computer Science at Northeastern University. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you ever regretted something you posted and wondered if there was a way to permanently delete it? What about emails and texts? What is your question? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. I have a feeling I'm not going to like everything I hear from you today, but let's go. Judith, when we talk about someone's digital footprint or digital trail, we're not just talking about old Facebook posts, are we? What is part of your digital trail?
Oh my goodness. It's maybe easier to ask what is not part of your digital trail. Everything we do online, be it checking in at a location, sharing a review, writing emails, sending text messages, even posting on, say, Reddit, where we think we might be anonymous, it's all part of our digital trail. And that's not even including, say, public records of houses we've bought or sold, or races we've run in, or horse shows we've been a part of. I Google myself every once in a while, and it's amazing what you can find out about yourself. And I try to keep things pretty private, but it's really impressive and scary at the same time. Anything you put on a keyboard on something that is connected to the internet could potentially come back 10 years later. Hey, you said this way back then there. What do you think about that now? And that can come as a surprise at times.
What about something like a fitness tracker?
That might be a Gary question. I like to think my fitness tracker does not know how to post that stuff online because I have it turned off, but Gary might be able to tell us that I'm wrong there.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, your fitness tracker actually connects to your cell phone. Your cell phone is using an app and it's recording information about you. Pretty much anything digital just goes into the ecosystem and you never really know what's going on. My background has to deal with digital forensics, and that was often what we had to do, was think outside the box with fitness trackers, e-readers, gaming systems, and most importantly, your cell phone, to build pictures of people based on their digital footprint. I mean, for the forces of good in that situation, of course, to try to fight crime. But Even your fitness tracker, if it's connected to an app which is going to report to your phone, it's saying things about you when you're awake, when you're asleep, when you're exercising, possibly where you're at. A lot of, especially we get where to go to from like a fitness tracker to like a Garmin wristwatch or a smartwatch. I mean, it's tracking where you're jogging, where you're exercising, your trails, so people, where you're at is being recorded. So, you never really know.
Okay,
And
so a
then,
couple big questions here. You said it goes out into the ecosystem. For those of us, okay, for lay people, what do you mean by the ecosystem? Where does it all go?
Well, it goes a lot of different places. I mean, that's why this kind of the word the cloud or the ecosystem is very nebulous, right? There's a lot of different places it could end up. We're all about being digitally connected, and we're all about the Internet of Things and connecting all devices to everything else. So when I say ecosystem, I'm just sort of trying to group together anywhere that it could possibly go.
All
I mean,
right. Think about if you're using, say, iCloud on your iPhone to store your pictures, that means that Apple has all of the images that you've ever taken or deleted.
Our Google
That
Photos.
exactly.
But
So
Judith,
this
it's
is,
so convenient.
oh, yes, it is. But it,
Well, there you go. You just hit that. You just the key word right there. Ding, ding, ding. Convenience,
exactly.
computer security, and privacy. It is all about that balance, and that is what we have sacrificed today,
Right.
for the convenience of being able to pay for things with our cell phone, for using GPS on our cell phone, for combining everything into a single device. It is about convenience, and every generation that follows us will be giving up a little bit more of their
Right.
privacy to get that convenience.
And
So
in a
who
con
is
Go ahead, Judith, you talk and then I'll ask the question. Go ahead.
Well, and to just further concern people even more is we live in a country where most of that is highly unregulated, right? So Apple, Google, they're these major corporations that own a lot of our data. And as a user, we don't really have any recourse. You know, the European GDPR allows folks to request having data removed, for instance. In the United States, we don't have that kind of power. So we're really, if you will, at the mercy of these big tech companies that have all this data about us.
So, Gary, what I want to know is when we talk about people finding out this information, who is they? For example, is it hackers? Is it perfectly legitimate organizations? Is it both? I mean, I'm going to go back to the fitness tracker example. I might not care if somebody finds out that I ordered some socks from L.L. Bean. Everybody has to wear socks. That's not deeply personal information. But if I've put my height and weight and it's recording my pulse, I may not want that out there. I may not want somebody finding that out.
So the key point there is you have to go back to the definition of privacy and what your right to privacy actually means. It's not about whether something is personal or harmful. It's not about hackers. It's not about companies. It's about your right to choose.
Yes.
And you're giving up your right to choose in exchange for convenience. Now we can go down a rabbit hole about what you purchase can be nefariously used against you. You're just talking maybe not your socks or your favorite brand of toilet paper, but what if you buy a pregnancy test? What if you purchase something else that's highly personal? I mean, that's that can change a lot. Sorry, Judith.
Judith.
Yeah, so I love that you brought up the idea of privacy. Folks, I have found, tend to think of privacy in terms of on or off, but really, privacy is about a series of circles, right? With you in the middle. And then around that are these circles where you have less and less control about who gets information about you. And it used to be that we were really able to control, I'm only sharing this with my best friends. And then that next circle is I'm only sharing this with my neighbors. And that next circle is my larger community. With the advent of digital media, our ability to control who and what is in those circles has effectively disappeared. And that is what is so hard. At the same time, it's really difficult to live in today's world and not give up some of that control. I mean, try, sure, you could live without a fitness tracker, but can you live without having, say, email? Or can you live without having a credit card on your phone, right? It's your convenience levels will seriously decrease if you try to retain that kind of control.
Gary, there have been headlines in the past couple weeks about a certain political candidate here in Maine having old, embarrassing, worse than embarrassing posts revealed. Clearly, he had deleted them, but they were still findable. A lot of people have embarrassing social media posts out there, maybe embarrassing emails out there. I'm thinking of people who drank too much in college and posted party pictures, or that's probably the most common one. But
Are we talking about my students now? What?
is it all deletable? Is there a way to go back and really scrub your digital footprint?
No. I mean, the very short answer to that is no. There are companies, there are groups out there that archive the internet, that save, that constantly run things and try to save copies of things. Whenever you post something on Facebook, especially if you're a celebrity or a political figure, there's no way to know who might screenshot that or copy that information. You can just safely assume that anything and everything that you ever post on any social media, that you send out through any digital means, you give up, you give up control. I mean, I regularly talk to my students and tell them, you don't post things like what you're describing, but with party pictures, because eventually one day you're going to apply for jobs and they're going to search you out.
Judith.
I echo Gary's words. I always tell my students I'm really grateful that I came of age before social media and cell phones were a thing. At the same time, that is also asking the impossible, right? Because the nature of the social media animal, if you will, is self-disclosure, right? The norm surrounding our social media use is that you show people who you are. And the more authentic you're perceived to be, the more likes, comments, shares, and follows you will get. And that's what people on social media are generally out for. And what complicates that is that we have this idea now that our identities are somehow fixed. Like who we are 10 years ago is who we are now, is who we are in 10 years. And that's actually not true. But it's really hard to explain to your social media audience, well, I made that post 10 years ago. I am not that person anymore. Because we somehow, as a society, no longer view this ability for change as a real thing, right? Like you create a social media identity and that's it, that's who you are. And that's so complicated. At the same time, living without social media is very, very difficult.
Yeah, and so both of you teach young people, Gen Z's, very young, very comfortable with an online presence, very comfortable with the idea that people will know a lot about them. And I'm wondering if, Gary, you have guidance beyond don't post pictures of yourself drinking online. I mean, what is sort of the, how do you get through, or do you feel like you need to? Do you feel like, you know what, it's not worth it. The world's changing, and they're going to have to live in a different world than I grew up in.
No, you still need to train. You still need to educate. You still need to educate, and you need to start at the lowest level, K-12. As soon as they start, getting the ability to get online and post things, they're going to be encouraged to. I mean, that is part of, that is part of our current society, right? And they need to be safe. They need to consider everything that they're posting. And you know kids are going to do that. You know that they're going to be smart about it, right?
Well,
Just
and
by
that's
default.
what I've seen working with K through 12 is we tend to assume that these kids are a lot more savvy than they actually are. We tend because they know how to use the phone sometimes better than the parents. That doesn't mean that they're aware where their posts are going, who can see them, and that they're going to stay online forever. And so sometimes I hear schools say, well, we'll just get rid of, cell phones altogether. That is also not a feasible option. So I'm with Gary. Like media literacy education needs to start very, very early and continue on. Just because Gary and I are grown doesn't mean we know everything about
Well, I
digital
was going to
media
say,
either.
yeah, so this media literacy education idea, we're always talking about young people, but I'm wondering if it's, those of us 40 plus who might really need it. I'm thinking of an example. I have kids in their 20s, and I notice their friends post pictures of a trip after they get back, mm-hmm. whereas people my age might post a picture of a vacation while they're there. And I'm guessing, Gary, for security reasons, that's not the best idea.
It's up to you. The most important thing is that that everyone is aware that whenever that you do that, you are revealing that you are not at home, mm-hmm. that you were on a trip, that you're putting it out there. I mean, statistics, you're putting something out there into a huge environment, into a huge ecosystem. Will somebody see it? Will somebody, you know, notice that? I don't know, but you need to be aware that the risk that you are taking.
Yeah. I want to ask, I asked you, Gary, can you erase it? And you said no. But are there things you can do to make it less easy for people to find information about you, old posts about you? Are there steps you can take to improve, maybe not erase, but improve your digital footprint?
Again, no. The best thing is to not put anything out there that you don't want to share to start with. I mean, you consider everything that you're doing that you're going to put out there and, you know, ask yourself, is there anything embarrassing here? Is there anything I need to not put out there? You lose control. You put it out there in the public as soon as you click the post button.
And Judith, we're talking a lot about social media, but email, even email is a part of this conversation, correct?
Absolutely. I work at the University of Maine where all of our emails are FOIA-able. I think that's a word, where anybody can use FOIA to see your emails. And that means that, you know, you try to think about what am I saying? It's sometimes it feels odd because, you know, I came into email as I went into college. So for me, email is like a letter, right? Envelope sealed. And it's not. An email is like basically throwing a letter without an envelope around it in the mailbox. Even if your email is not under FOIA, it's still relatively, quote unquote, easy to get into someone's emails, should you want to. And I don't know that enough people are aware of that because we tend to think it's entirely secure and it's not. I mean, like, I want to echo what Gary was saying. I tell my students, if you are not willing to shout this from the rooftops or hang this on a banner off an airplane, then maybe you should not be typing it out on a keyboard. Be aware of what you're saying in any online spaces, including email and text messages.
I was going to say, text messages, are they any more secure than email?
Maybe a little, but again, you know.
I think that's the first time anybody's ever said on a main calling.
Well, you're also trusting who you're sending the text message to and whatever server it goes through to get to the other person. There's a whole system, but.
And again, if your text messages go to the cloud or something similar, that means that a major corporation now has all your text messages.
Mm-hmm. Is most of this information in reality being used in an aggregate fashion or an individual targeting individuals?
So again, we're going back to recognizing the fact that you are giving up your privacy. It sounds like you're kind of talking about like hackers or advertisement companies and things like that. And
it's sort of like on the ground in real life. Is most of this information being used by companies to say, oh, 30% of our people bought that sweater because they saw it on Instagram, so we need to advertise more on Instagram? Or is it, or we figured out that people who are women between the age 40 and 50 really like that sweater, and so we're going to target them on Instagram? Or is it psychological manipulation where organizations, individuals, companies are trying to manipulate you and get you to do something you might not do otherwise?
To get you to purchase something otherwise or to do something? I'm sorry, I'm still not quite sure I understand.
To purchase, to vote, to
participate. Whenever you're surfing, it's basically whenever you're online, whenever you're doing sort of web shopping or watching news articles, you're basically broadcasting your current location, your IP address from wherever you're at. So if you go from one site to another, they're going to see that that same address was looking at this particular article and it was doing this particular shopping for this particular thing. And there are lots of companies out there that people pay for ad targeting and for things like that, that will put that information together and then try to push ads out to you. So yes, it's being collected and you're being manipulated in a lot of way. Have you never gone? I had one student that was shopping for I believe it was a handle for their toilet. And then so they did, you know, they shopped and they looked around for a couple and they bought one. And then suddenly for the next month or so, they were complaining because that's all the ads they got. And like, look, I only have one toilet. I don't need constant ads about this. So yeah, it happens all the time.
I mean, we've all seen that, right? I clicked on one LL Bean sweater 2 days ago, and my entire Instagram feed is now LL Bean sweaters because evidently I need one. But it is, I would argue this data is also used in the aggregate, the way you just described, Jennifer. So there's also this, 30% of women in Maine buy LL Bean sweaters awareness. But when it comes to the individual social media user, what you do online is definitely used to create tailored ads to you, which can be very funny, as Gary just showed with his example of the toilet handle.
So we do
Well, I'm
need to
just
take a
pointing out
break.
because. Oh,
But
sorry.
when we come back, I want to talk about how artificial intelligence may be even changing the way that your data is used. And I know our audience has lots of questions. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and we are all learning about your digital trail, also called your digital footprint. What's out there? What's permanent? Can you even protect it? With me, Dr. Judith Rosenbaum, who teaches in UMaine's Department of Communication and Journalism. She's department chair. And Dr. Gary Cantrell, who teaches computer science at the Rue Institute and Northeastern University. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Judith, I teased this before the break. We know that artificial intelligence is putting its fingers, its toes into every aspect of our lives. How does artificial intelligence change the way your digital footprint is being used?
Wow. I mean, I could probably write a doctoral dissertation on that specific question alone. What's so interesting about AI to me as a scholar is how it impacts how people present themselves online. So we're seeing far, so for instance, people use AI to, embellish the way they look or embellish what they say or create, fake videos or fake sound bites. And so for me, what I find interesting is how AI can shift our digital footprint because it provides us with one more tool to change our identity, right? To change our looks, to change what we sound like. And for me, that's a really interesting aspect since a lot of our social media presentation hinges on being authentic. And with the introduction of AI, it raises the question of, well, then what is authentic and do users even recognize it?
Gary, anything to add to that?
No, that pretty much covered it. It's like we don't know what's real and what's not real anymore. And I don't know, AI is just a huge topic in and of itself. Every bit of data that you're putting out there is using to train without your knowledge. We're actually building and changing AI with our digital footprint, with all the information that we're putting out there as we go. And yeah, what's real and what's not.
It's absolutely fascinating. What my students, we have AI policies, and my students have told me that when they use AI, they try to train it to recognize their voice so that I can't recognize when they've used ChatGPT for their work, for instance. And to me, that's really fascinating that we're now creating this technological agent that can emulate a human. And that just raises so many ethical questions, as well as questions for what that does for our future digital footprint.
All right. And before we go to listener calls, I want to get back to something you said earlier, Gary. You mentioned that your background is in forensics. Tell us about that background. How did you use, how have you, did you used to work in law enforcement? How have you used digital forensics in the past?
So Digital forensics is basically taking all the digital footprint information that you're talking about and building a profile, creating a report that could be used for law enforcement. I moved here from Utah. I spent 13 years in Utah, and there we built a digital forensics lab that was part of a criminal justice department where we did training for students and we did service for law enforcement for the state of Utah. So personally, yes, I work directly with law enforcement for a long time, but it also has business applications as well.
For sure. And I'm wondering, I just have to ask you, do TV and the movies get it right? Can law enforcement figure out as much as Hollywood thinks they can?
Yes and no. The biggest problem is time. In a movie, they'll be like, oh, okay, well let's crack this password and a few keystrokes, and then suddenly you have the password and access to everything. No, it could take weeks, it could take months to do that kind of to do that kind of work. But yes, we can find out things that you thought you deleted years and years ago from if we have physical access to a device. But it takes time. It's not near like as quickly as they show in the movies.
All right, we'll go to Anita calling from Rockport. Hi, Anita, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've been hearing about that ICE has been given a chunk of money to use for surveilling people online to collect, basically to collect data on folks who may not be, whose opinions may not be in alignment with the current administration, and I'm wondering if your guests know anything about that.
I'll ask my guests, either of you, Judith's shaking her head. No, Gary, neither one of you knows.
No, I'm sorry. I haven't. I don't know anything about that.
Okay,
No, I
Anita,
haven't
thanks.
either.
Yeah, thanks for your question. Kim writes on an email, in light of today's program, I'm wondering if you or your guests can go over the benefits of a search engine like DuckDuckGo, which provides more privacy to its users. Is it worth changing to using that exclusively? I have some friends that use it, and I'm wondering if I should be too.
So again, it has to do with the balance between convenience and the amount of privacy that you give up. The difference between something like Google and DuckDuckGo is that DuckDuckGo is not going to do the ad targeting, or it's not supposed to, and it's not supposed to like target and collect the information about you. But it's also probably not going to be as quick and mainstream as something like Google. So convenience versus privacy again.
Judith?
I mean, I've had students use DuckDuckGo or Google Incognito, which does the same thing. It's wonderful, aside from the issues that Gary mentioned. But at the same time, if you are using a fitness tracker that is connected to an app, if you're using iCloud for your text messages, if you are on social media, then you're just protecting a really small sliver of your digital footprint. So the question then becomes, is it really worth it? Like, what are you keeping? Like I always, how to brown butter? Like, is that what you don't want the world to know? So I think the question is, what else are you doing? Would be a more relevant question for me.
An email here from Lindsay. I heard a few YouTube influencers advertise services that help delete or clean up your data trail. I think they mainly aim to remove your data from scammer databases, but I'm wondering if these kind of services are worthwhile. Do you recommend one?
Maybe better than nothing, but not much. Again, once it's out there, once you've already released it, the better. Let me just say it this way: the better option is to censor yourself to start with. If you're going to shop online, shop on reputable places. If you're going to use social networks, make sure that you consider everything that you're posting. So, proactive, not reactive, is always going to be the best solution, I think.
And it can't hurt to go back and look at your old social media posts and delete them if you're no longer comfortable, or delete an entire social media account. Again, it will not go away entirely, but it will be more difficult to find.
Yeah, Judith, you make a really, really good point there. It's like you think you use the word delete and you're thinking that it's either gone, it's either here or not here. That's absolutely not the case. There's different levels of destruction whenever you're talking about data, and as a result, there's different amounts of effort that's required to get that information back. So the goal is always to use the amount of destruction that makes it, how do I say this, that makes it more difficult than what it's worth to get it back. So it's like, always keep in mind, delete is not a, it's not binary. It doesn't mean it's either there or not there.
I want to ask about a use that might be legitimate, where somebody has died, a loved one has died, and you're trying to get, you're trying to access their digital footprint to, figure out the kind of things we need to figure out when someone has died. Which of you has, and I'm guessing it's you, Gary, which of you has some advice on what you do in that instance?
I'm sure we both do. But what I do personally between me and my spouse is we have a journal and we keep that journal in a safe. And that journal has certain passwords and things that would allow, access to a phone or an account. And, in case one of us, something bad happens to one of us. So you need to be proactive. There are companies out there that can hack into a phone. If they can break into it, that's what we did. That's a lot of what we did for law enforcement was getting into phones, but that's very expensive and that's very time consuming. Make a deal with a loved one, and record that access information.
I just absolutely love that I have a computer scientist here who says he has passwords in a journal in a safe, because that is exactly what I have, like a hard copy that my spouse and I share. Certain social media sites also allow you to appoint, I think it's called a legacy partner, so that if you were to pass away, this person can take over your social media accounts. But I cannot stress enough the importance of having an actual physical copy of something somewhere, because God forbid something happens to your phone, right? And now they can't get into anything. So that's we both have the same solution.
In a safe place, a
Right.
safety deposit box, or a safe not on your desk, not on a sticky note on your monitor,
Right.
in a very safe and secure place.
I have an email here from Jason. I'm constantly getting the feeling that my phone or my apps are listening to my conversations. If I have a conversation with my wife about building a garden, I start seeing ads on Facebook trying to sell me composters and garden tools. This has nothing to do with my searches, although that will definitely show up in my ads as well. Can you tell me if it's my phone or another device around the house?
No.
Does it make a difference if the devices are asleep or awake, on or off? Do apps have to be open for them to be listening to or tracking conversations? I know I'm not crazy. And Jason, I agree. This has happened to me as well. Judith?
So I'm really hoping Gary's not going to burst my bubble here, but my understanding is there's no listening. These sites are just really good at compiling data about you and figuring out what kind of person you are and what you might be wanting to do in the near future. Again, I'm really hoping Gary's not going to say, "Well, Judith, you're actually wrong and someone's listening to you."
You're not wrong. Theoretically, yes, it could listen, and there are ways to, hack and make that happen. But I think it's more likely that you've got some bias. Suddenly you buy a car of a certain color, and then suddenly everywhere you look, you see that car. You see that color, or hopefully it's coincidence. Now they are listening because they have to hear you say "Hello, Google," or they have to hear you when you talk. But that information is not supposed to be recorded.
Well, this is a question about artificial intelligence, though, Gary, because maybe there's not a person, sitting in a van outside your house listening to your conversation, but maybe artificial intelligence is listening and hears the word garden.
No, I'm
No?
sorry. No, see, we all like, I'm sorry, I'm gonna like burst a lot of people's bubble here, including my own, is we all like to think we're very unique. Like if you had told me 20 years ago that I'd be having a garden, I'd be like, "You are out of your mind." And here we are, I have a garden. Because most people my age apparently have gardens. We're all pretty predictable. And so when a system knows your age, your demographic, where you live, your interests, they can generally predict what we do, because as humans, we kind of live according to patterns.
Agreed.
So maybe our digital footprint isn't really that precious after all.
Some parts of it are, like your photos in the cloud or your text messages, but like if people know I'm shopping for a L.L. Bean sweater, that might not be so relevant.
All right. Well, we are talking about your digital trail, your digital footprint on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're trying to answer the question, how careful should you be about your online presence? Turns out the answer is tricky. Joining me today, Dr. Gary Cantrell, who is Associate Teaching Professor and Director of Computing Programs at the Roux Institute and Northeastern University, and Dr. Judith Rosenbaum, who is Chair of the Department of Communication and Journalism at the University of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. The lines are pretty full, but you can try to get through 1-800-399-3566 or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Okay, we're going to go to this email from Joseph. When the actions we post online are scrutinized so much that we cannot act like ourselves, our identities are then homogenized and humanity loses its identity. Are our identities on the line, especially the younger generations? Judith.
I mean, this is such a great question. Again, I could present on this for hours, but I mean, social media has really raised the question, what is our identity, right? Because what we present online, that's just an impression of how we want other people to see us. At the same time, most of us, it didn't happen unless it's on the gram or whatever the latest hippest platform is. That's become a real thing for a lot of folks. So, for many people, what we do online is who we are. And yet, what we do online is shaped by so many factors that it becomes really difficult to untangle these two, right? Who am I and who am I online? I don't have an answer. It's a great question, and it's one that I wish all social media users would ponder from time to time. What am I posting? Why am I posting it? Does this really reflect who I am?
And an email here from Peggy. Can all phone conversations on mobile phones be uncovered in the future? Gary?
If you're talking about text, maybe, but if you're talking about voice, no, that's usually gone pretty quick.
So if you want to have a conversation, you don't want others to overhear, a phone is much better than email or text.
Absolutely. Well, in person would be better.
Yeah,
In
and
person, not around a
imagine.
smart speaker, apparently.
We're
We'll go to
asking this new
Torbert. Yeah.
generation to talk
Calling
on the
from
phone.
York. Hi, Torbert. Torbert, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guests. The greatest threat to digital privacy is a software created by the Israeli corporation NSO. It's called Pegasus, and it enables the owner of the software to penetrate your phone, whether it's on or off, and take control of it, see through your camera, hear through your microphone, and it will do all this, whether you have encrypted whatever or not. And it's a source of supposedly anti-terrorist investigation.
Yeah, Torbert, I've read about Pegasus. Gary, what are your thoughts about this?
Sorry, I don't have any thoughts at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, Torbert, thank you. Let's see. We'll go to Pam calling from Belmont. Hi, Pam, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to add a footnote to all this discussion, perhaps a paw note, because I have a cat named Sammy, and when I walk into the room and say, "Hi, Sammy," Siri says, "Yes."
Yep.
I get the same thing. Yeah.
Whenever I say, "Do be serious," my phone says, "What do you need?" And I'm surprised she's not saying it right now, actually.
Pam, thanks for your call. Let's see. We'll go to Joel, who's calling from Penobscot. Hi, Joel. Go ahead.
I am plagued 4, sometimes 10 times a day by an email spam telling me I'm out of cloud space, and I'm not. And I hit the spam, I unsubscribe, I block it, but they come in so many times a day. Is there any solution to this?
Can you use a filter? Check your email client out and see if there's like a keyword that spam is always using, and see if you can actually implement a filter to send that directly to the recycle bin. That's what I would try to do.
Joel, good luck to you. An email here from Cody. Storing user data for companies that have millions of users must cost a lot of money. Do the companies storing this data ever just toss the information because of the cost? Another question, when companies use data for research, do they need to go through an IRB? Is consent waived through the user when they sign the terms and conditions? Will one of you tell us what an IRB is?
Sure. An IRB is an institutional review board that is required by federal law for any institution that receives federal funding. So the University of Maine and Northeastern University both have IRBs. Anytime you do research with human subjects, you have to get approval from this board to make sure that your research is ethical. So if these companies are receiving federal funding, then they would ideally go through an IRB, but they're not required to have an IRB because they're not an educational institution that receives federal funding. Gary,
All
I don't know
right.
if you have anything to add to that.
Not particularly. It depends on how the information's collected, whether it has personal identifiable information. I mean, it depends on the type of data we're talking about. The other part of the question was like, does it take a lot of money to store all this data? And the answer to that is yes. But we're getting so good at storing such large amounts of data that we could do a lot more than we used to be able to with a lot less money.
It's obvious from what happened this week that if somebody's running for political office, what they've said in the past can work against them. And we've used the example of somebody applying for a job. But if someone's listening here and they're not planning to go on a job hunt, perhaps they're retired, is there really not as much danger with having your information out there, or are there still things I'm not thinking about that one needs to worry about? I'm not asking that question well, but I'm guessing if the stakes are lower, if you're at a place in your life where maybe a former Facebook post would embarrass you, but what the heck is anybody going to do with that?
Well, I mean, there's always the case of identity theft, or, like if you go on vacation and you post that you're away, someone breaking into your home. So you do have to think about it from that angle. You might be retired, you still have a social network of friends who see you a certain way. And then if a post from way back when comes to haunt you because it like shatters that image of you, then that hurts your social network, right? So, and even if you're not on the job market or running for political office, we are hurting animals as humans. We do like the people around us to think nicely of us. And if a previous online post might shatter that, that's something we'd probably want to prevent.
Thoughts, Gary?
Again, the idea of privacy is that you get to choose. And the problem is that you're not getting to choose. But I personally, I don't use social media anymore if I can avoid it. My work, you can Google me and find out enough about me just because of where I work and everything else. I don't like to put anything out there anymore, because I never know what's going to come back, what my students are going to see, how that's going to be perceived.
Gary, I feel the same way. I posted a picture of a pretty tree the other day, but that was about it. But it also makes me sad in a little bit because I do enjoy seeing, my friends' vacations. I enjoy seeing when their kids graduate from college or get married. Boy, it's a little bit sad to think that we all might be pulling back from that.
Well, it's evolved. I'm sorry. It's evolved from time. And when we were first doing social networks, it was about sharing vacation, sharing photos, sharing what we cooked. But now, as we become more and more ingrained into social networks, we just share more and more of ourselves. I agree. I miss the days whenever I was just looking at pictures of puppies and kitties, and then suddenly now I'm getting political posts and such.
I mean, I will say that I take the approach that most of what I post on social media, I'd be willing to take an ad out in the paper, although I guess nobody reads those anymore, but you get the idea. However, what the three of us are talking about here is very generation specific, right? our college students, Gary and my students, and students in high school, they live their lives on TikTok. They share what they eat, what they drink, how they slept, their workouts. So for them, this idea of pulling back doesn't reflect the reality of their engagement with social media. And so, I think we need to be aware that there is a generational gap there.
Oh, yeah. And
Going
then
to
what's
an
going to happen
email.
next?
Yeah, I'm going to go to an email here from Lynn. I had been backing up my computer on an external hard drive. It fell off the table and died, after which I started backing up on the cloud. I understand there are different types of external drives. Which type is the best and safest? Gary, are you comfortable answering that question?
There isn't I don't do IT work anymore. I don't know which specific drive would be better than any other. I'm sorry. Multiple backups is what we always say. Don't try to just always depend on one thing.
An email here from Shannon. An interesting data tracking experiment I recently learned of. When signing up for something online, add that site's name as your middle name. Then, when you start getting targeted emails and ads, you can tell who sold your data by how it's addressed to you. You're nodding,
Yes.
Judith.
Yeah, I do this. I change my middle initial so I know where it stuff comes from. And I mean, I started doing this back in college when I would sign up for free newspaper subscriptions, so I knew who sold my stuff. I wholeheartedly support this.
We'll go to Dick calling from Portland. Hi, Dick, go ahead.
Good morning. I in the process of signing up for a thing called Bitdefender. I had trouble getting it to connect. I Googled their customer service number, and it turned out to be a dark site. And I foolishly let them screen share with me. Long story short, I figured out it wasn't a good deal. I got offline. It took me $2,500 to get my computer squared away, but it turned out that they have sold my email address, and I get 100 to 150 spam messages a day from everything from the cloud message that someone mentioned a few minutes ago to porn messages to just everything and anything, gutter guards. Is there any way? I've tried blocking them. I've tried never hear from them again options.
What a
Is there
nightmare.
anything?
What a nightmare, Nick. Dick, I'm going to cut you off just because we're running low on time. Do either of my guests have any advice for Dick?
Change email
Yeah,
addresses.
that was going to be my advice. Just get a new email address.
Yeah, sorry.
I know, this is
It
terrible.
sucks, but
Yeah, good luck to you. We'll go to Martha calling from Gorham. Hi, Martha. If you could be quick, that would be great.
I have a very basic Samsung phone. It updated the other day, and then when that night, suddenly the screen appeared that I'd never seen before. So I was saying to my husband, "Hey, there's a screen on my phone." And then I noticed that it was recording everything I said. "Hey, there's a screen on this phone." So then I said to my husband, "Like, what's going on here?" And then this voice came back at me. The phone started saying to me, "Oh, is there a, can I help you with this voice that's talking to you, this that you hear?" So it suddenly started to record what I was saying and was talking back to me. I went to the Spectrum store. They said it's something called Gemini, so it does listen to you and it does talk to you, and I never asked it to.
Okay,
The
Judith's
way
smiling. Do you know what she's talking about, Gemini?
I do believe Gemini is a ChatGPT AI application, if I'm not mistaken, Gary. Yeah, so
Yeah.
it's equivalent to ChatGPT. So she basically had a window open that was an AI that was listening for her to tell it what to do.
Yeah. It was waiting for instructions.
Right.
It could be completely confusing. Thank you. And
Yes.
we're going to go try to squeeze in one more call. Marisol in Appleton, we have about 15 seconds for you to ask your question.
Great. Thank you so much. I just was hoping the speakers could just briefly touch on the role of some of the services like Delete Me that will contact data brokers that will sell your information as a way of minimizing some publicly available info that can be used to scam people, especially seniors.
Gary.
Again, you can it's probably better than nothing. Some of the companies will provide a service, but the better option is to be proactive because you never know whether they're what they're going to do, how thorough they're going to be, and whether it does any good. So
Marisol, thank you for your call. You're the last call of this hour. And thank you both to our guests, to both of our guests, Dr. Gary Cantrell, Associate Teaching Professor and Director of Computing Programs with the Rue Institute and Northeastern University, and Dr. Judith Rosenbaum, UMaine Professor and Chair of the Department of Communication and Journalism. Our sound engineer, Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, it is our annual Made in Maine gift guide. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.